There's a code of silence, and it can't go on.
Hi, folks. I'm Alan Watt, and this is Cutting Through the Matrix.
Quite the times we live in. Quite the times. I was talking to someone this week on the incredible amount of management we have over us. The general public have no idea at all what's going on with the multi-layered strata, really, of specialized departments and really forms of bureaucracies that are added on, tacked on, tacked on, tacked on. And a lot of them don't get elected, of course. They're, as you well know, they're actually farmed out to private organizations by government to managers. This is the new form of governance, as they call it. And we're really well into it, you know, well into it. But the public, again, are kept running and when they're not running and working, they're playing. And when they're playing, they're being indoctrinated. And when they're playing, they want to get zonked out too. They don't want you to think about all the nasty, nasty stuff that's going on in the world because it's too much. The way it's presented to them, especially because it's all perception management. You're given the perceptions you're supposed to have and how you're supposed to think about things and how you're supposed to see things. It's quite the system we live in. Quite the system. But when you look at it all, it makes a lot of sense the way they do it on behalf of the controllers and owners. We're owned. We truly are owned. When you see the arrogance, that incredible arrogance that has come out of universities with the new courses and managing us all, from the eco this and eco that and sustainability this and sustainability that, it's just phenomenal, isn't it? They've all got to get jobs. And they get jobs through massive grants to the private organizations that manages. But as I say, people have been weaned out of democracy with, but still under the illusion that they have it, because they're allowed to vote every 4 or 5 years. But in reality, it's your governance, the governance system is not democratic. It's not intended to be democratic. It's intended to have the appearance of democracy. The old Soviet system, remember, Soviet system meant ruled by council. And these councils were appointed by the people at the top of the Soviet system, naturally. But they had the appearance of almost voluntary panels, you might say, for unions or for different strata, again, of working class people, or workers, put it that way. This nonsense about it was for the workers is a good con indeed, the Soviet system, because it wasn't. But nothing ever is. Nothing really ever is. Power and technique of governing billions of people across the world has never been lost. And since we've been here for an awful long time with this system we call civilization, and by that I really just mean that we have records of writing at the very least, because writing seems to have come in not to entertain yourselves and read good novels in ancient days, to chipping away in the cave there on your stone tablets. And no, nothing to do with that at all. It was to do, if you look at Sumer, for instance, about record keeping, monetary record keeping especially, law, the transference of property, the dividing of property, land property, and so on. Incredible system, so incredibly old. But along with it came governance. How do you govern the people? And naturally, those who had the education and those who had the time to study how to con people, basically, how to manage the people. And it's an art in itself, a big art. Machiavelli wasn't the first person to come along with techniques of being awfully devious. I think from the beginning of time, this whole idea of governance has always been there. It's always been there. And so what you get, really, is a system where school is taught to the few. And school comes from the Greek word, the old Greek term, for leisure. Because only those with leisure could learn anything. The rest of people were toiling away or slaving away, literally slaving away at times. But the people who would end up governing the people and managing big businesses, the old corporations of their day, the big corporations, to do with trade and so on, they were taught how to manage the general public. In a sense, too, that's what also philosophy, old ancient philosophy, was all about. Maybe even not so much ancient either, by the way. It's a substitute, especially in a post-Christian era today, of how to manage people, how people tick, what life's about, according always from a ruling class's point of view, and how to manage the people. And Plato was more open about it, because he wrote about it in the Republic, basically. He put into it the questions that he and his own particular class at the time had been asking and throwing around amongst each other about governing the people and how to do it and so on. What do people want? How do you keep them happy? How do you even mislead them? And also, along with it comes the arrogance of trying to find a reason for being so arrogant. Which is, of course, and this is the thing with Plato, he said, is it possible that we, the governors, basically, have lived before, since we can understand the geometry very quickly, we pick it up very quickly, mathematics and so on, but these other people can't. So they rationalize it. Well, that's because we're superior in that case. Anything that makes you feel superior is a good technique for being really rotten to everybody else. That's never changed. Never changed. And as I say, the Politburo and the Soviet system had their big dash outs in the country. They got access to these things along the Plato idea, you see, of the Republic. And they didn't have to own them. They had the use of them, and they were staffed with servants, because they love servants. You know, communists love servants. All leaders love servants and so on. As I said, Bezmenov said the same thing, that he defected, and many others like him had defected, because it wasn't because of the lacked anything in the West. They had all the same items they could purchase quite easily and cheaply for them, and all the luxuries that they had were equivalent to all the counterparts in the West in government. But the dashers in the country for Politburo, and they go hunting and all that stuff, and wonderful trips, and they can go abroad and do amazing tours and trips and stuff, and just the general population couldn't do it, you see. So there's immediate strata of superior types and inferior types and ordinary types, and that's how things really work. Eh? Never fails, always comes out to be the same way. Margaret Thatcher said it years ago, and it was interesting to me. I mean, I knew about the Lord Alfred Milner group. I've given lots of talks on all this history, and also too the philosophers going way back beyond, before even Plato came along with his idea of the Republic and special breeding of different classes and professions. Even soldiers would breed with soldiers, women, men and women, etc., and different classes would for special functions, for special jobs. That kind of stuff, but all the way up, and I thought, you know, the Lord Alfred Milner group really ran. They were like a big bureaucracy overseeing what was called the British Empire and adding to it on behalf of people that a lot of folk don't even know their names. The ones who ruled it then in the City of London, the big financiers and so on, who also put their sons off to be governors generals standing in for royalty, with the powers of royalty appointed over India and different places. Quite amazing. And all business came through their hands, you know, and from those countries. Incredibly lucrative for them. Completely sewn up with the banking industry of the time. That's it there. So anyway, they talked about it in Brave New World in the 1930s and how they'd bring in a system where the state would raise the children. Never mind the fact that they would literally genetically engineer the people, the right kind of people with the right genes, with gene replacements and all the rest of it, and to get the right categories of work distribution for different jobs, from the intellectual to the menial. And they would breed them all, different classes of them. And they would get lots of sex, hyper-sexualized, lots, every night. In fact, it was almost mandatory you had to have sex. But you would have a sterile relationship. There'd be no offspring. They even make it taboo to have sex with the same person twice in a week. So promiscuity had to be shared, you see. A lot of these ideas came from Plato and in the Republic, where literally women would be held in common. Well, women may object to that, so you don't tell them that they're all there to be shared around with everybody. You just tell them that they're free, you know, and give them a paycheck and give them a culture that basically gives you exactly what you wanted to until they're all in common. Yeah. These things are not by chance. They don't happen by chance. But we're trained to just close our eyes and sit back, and all these better people who come out of better wombs, special wombs, can govern you or manage you all and rule you and take care of all the big problems. And that's how it's done, isn't it? And the real world is vastly different from how we're trained. The ones above you, when you meet some of them, actually, they're very straightforward and within their own groups of what they're going to say. They're not so guarded as everybody, you know, you think they're amongst themselves. But if they think you're one of them too, it can happen as well. But they can be very, very open about the system. And they laugh. They would laugh at you if you came up with the Disney statements. They literally have no illusions about the world or the positions in the world that they have themselves and how they help to govern and rule everything unseen by the public, in fact, and even unknown by the public that even exist. But they certainly are there. And of course, Carol Quigley talked about them. He called them the oligarchy. You find that long before that too, you find that Aldous Huxley called them the same kind of thing, a ruling oligarchy, a dominant minority at the top, a scientific elite ruling on behalf of the dominant minority, and on the way down, a whole different category after category, very much like Plato's Republic to an extent, and how they'd have literally select breeding programs for different ruling classes, including military classes as well. But that exists, it does exist on a high level, and it's been there your whole life. It's been there long before your grandparents were born. We're living through an agenda, as they say. And there's a caller on the line. It's Darren from Ireland, still there. Hello?
Hello, Alan. How are you today?
Not bad at all, yeah.
I just had a quick question. I was finished reading the Republic by Plato, and there's just something I can't get my head around. There's the last part on kind of the eight heavens and all this. Is this Kabbalistic, or is it astrology he's pointing out when he talks to the heavens?
Yeah, he has to go into that because things get camouflaged. You understand, he really promoted what we would call eugenics in his day. And he was part of the aristocracy. He actually explained that why the aristocracy were, he said, were brighter and in charge of all of those people down there. And they had to go into mystical talk towards the end rather than... Because he belonged to a mystical school, remember, that carried on for quite some centuries, and then down through Socrates and then on to him on one hand and Aristotle on the other. So they did go back quite a ways. Where they, at one time they had to confuse the average listener who wasn't in on the acts or the terms used, and use Kabbalistic types of symbology to explain horrible things otherwise, horrible things that could be done to the general people. So he does touch on that. But, I mean, he also believed that, in one little experiment he does in one of his talks, he says that he calls a little boy over and he says, he gives him a mathematical question, and the boy works this out and gives him an answer. He says, why do some people have the ability to get the answers or not, just like we do? And he says, because the ones that do have lived before. So he believed, like they did, a lot of the elite did, in a form of reincarnation. And so that was prevalent right up into the Neoplatonic age as well. Neoplatonism, it was all through Gnosticism as well, that whole belief system, that the superior people had been here before, and that's why they already had knowledge. Therefore, they had the right to rule over others. It reemerged with Madame Blavatsky again in the 1800s under the guise of theosophy and hidden masters, the hidden masters being the ones who had been reincarnated many times before. And a lot of the aristocracy were certainly in on this belief system. So it's a very old system for those who are in charge. And it appeals to their vanity, of course, and their belief that they are so special, that the reason for it being is that they've been here so many times. They don't have to be here, and therefore they're really a master. They're only here for altruistic reasons, to lead the world the way it should be run. In other words, depopulate all the unfit, etc. He realized very, very early on, actually, the way it would go with Brave New World. That's why he wrote the book, and he thought about that whole thing for many years before he wrote the book in the 1930s, of the planned society, where literally everything to do with society, the division of labour and so on, was scientifically managed. Human beings were genetically engineered and born from artificial wombs. All the supposed defects were brought out of them. And defects could be argumentative behaviour, for instance. That'd be all removed by selective genes. And, of course, they had their perfect blueprint, basically, for subsequent generations once they perfected one. And they could just clone them, and so on, and then have them born in test tubes. That was the idea of it. Or mixed in test tubes and born in artificial wombs. So anyway, here we are, and we look at all this stuff, and I've got so many articles I've saved over many, many years of artificial, starting with artificial insemination, of course, and then the gene manipulation many years ago, and every government's been involved in this kind of stuff for so long that they'll never, ever disclose all their works until for another 50, 100 years, because that's how things are done. In 100 years' time, no one cares. And what you'll be in 100 years, you'll have completely no interest in it anyway. Well, you'll be so far beyond here, beyond the now. But anyway, Huxley saw this coming, and he knew that the division of labour, that's one of the big things you see in a socialist society. The intelligentsia should manage the system. Huxley referred to a dominant minority at the very top of his system in his talks with Mike Wallace and other people. He said that there's always been a dominant minority, and he didn't see any reason why it would ever fade away. So you'd have a dominant minority, but amongst the minority he's talking about, you have the money-managed system. In Brave New World, there's no mention of money or anything like that. There's maybe little extra perks and so on for your status, but everybody was fed. You had your drugs supplied, your soma, to keep you happy, and no one was really bored, and there's lots. There's nothing you couldn't have, material-wise. You could have everything, all toys, fun, and everything else, and no one worried about it. So it's pretty well been heavily managed. But the thing was, because you were created to be a worker of some kind under the Alpha Plus type, you would still be programmed, basically, through genetically programming for a specific function. It's really fascinating to see it, because this is an ancient idea, going way back thousands of years. And the socialist system itself is the same for those who don't understand it. The perennial philosophy, as they call it, and so on. It's the right of those who understand, or those who know, meaning in the groups that they've joined, intelligentsia, that they have the right to rule over the lesser beings. Plato talked about an awful lot. He came out with his book, The Republic, and in The Republic he had a stratified society of experts, basically, who would breed in for themselves. This is the precursor to Brave New World, but it's been a kind of handbook and something they've toyed with for many, many, many centuries. Because Plato said that in the Republic, they would have a guardian class at the top, who would only breed amongst themselves. And then you'd have ones down below, and you'd even breed your soldiers. There would be mixed women and men. Awfully interesting, really. And here we are today with the same thing going on. And there's way more. I think if they breed at all, they may even get eventually grants if they do breed in the military with other people in the military, and have offspring, until you have a military class. So you had all these different classes, specially bred, in Plato's Republic, and how to manage them all, etc., etc.
Remember what Plato said, and this is the hero that they all recite. they bring it up in their books when they write their memoirs, how Plato was their hero with his book, The Republic. We talk about breeding specific different types of humans by selective breeding. Tall ones for picking apples, short ones for working mines and so on. And also how to keep them dumb and stupid, because they didn't want intellectual ones. Intellectual ones might just walk off the job and say, well, you know what to do with that, don't you? You know where to shove that. Remember, at every move here, someone's deciding the outcome, but it's not the guy at the bottom, male or female.
So what he's telling you here, Russell's telling you, is partial truth. They'd already found ways to mutate genes in a desirable direction, as he would say. But he mustn't let the public know that at that time. And what they're talking about too is if you weren't quite up to a standard, because obviously if they're talking about what's desirable and undesirable, there must be standards set for what is desirable for IQ and different things. Therefore, they would enhance the person, the fetus, they would remove the ones they would call defective and put in the ones which would be more effective. Harking back to Plato's Republic of breeding humans for specific tasks, well, here we go again. These guys all were tremendous fans and advocates of Plato, because this is a very, very old society that runs the world.
When you go into the philosophers of ancient Greece, who all appeared around, you know, 2000 BC onwards, and put up masses of information out on the human condition, the mindset of the human beings and their behavior, it's never been explained to anyone where this particular intelligentsia came from or where they got this knowledge. And when they even had the time to study all of this and do all their teaching and writings. But if you do go into the books deep enough, you'll find that every one of them went to Egypt to be trained in what they call then the mysteries. And the mysteries really are a form of waking up into reality, being taken up and guided. If you're needed at the top, if you have the right stuff, as they call it, the right stuff, and by that I mean the R-I-T-E, right stuff. They put them through rituals, and that's where right comes from. The ritual, the right. If they can use those particular individuals, they'll put you in the higher degrees, and then you leave Egypt, go back to your native country, or where you're of your ascent, and you start up a cult, basically. A cult which would bring in the young, that followed particular precepts. They would have codes of silence for maybe a few years, and those who couldn't keep quiet were weeded out. Those who didn't have the ability to follow through were weeded out. And the ones who attained their apprenticeships, the sorcerer's apprentice, they were actually trained in higher degrees in mysteries, which is all to do with a future to come where intelligentsia should rule the world by using revolution. And the key to it certainly is revolution. Socrates, Aristotle, Plato, all of these guys studied in Egypt. Not only Egypt, because the three main centers in the ancient world. Plato also went to the Middle East for part of his training after he left Egypt, and then even to India. The same old centers of the world, the Trinity, the three main centers. You'll find that Socrates himself was condemned by those who ruled in his time, condemned for corrupting the minds of the youth and carefully laying out a strategy for rebellion that would take over and knock out the old and bring in the new system, a system run by this new intelligentsia, who truly believed that they had the right to rule the world. They call themselves the natural aristocracy. However, going deeper into it, you'll find this natural aristocracy already were the wealthy aristocracy of that period. and Plato and others, and Socrates were no exceptions to that. But they also, on an exoteric level at least, told their students and the world that the reason they had such intelligence was because of their religion. They believed that they were reincarnating into the same family trees down through history, down through time. They believed that the reason they understood mathematics and algebra and geometry and all of these things was because they'd done it all before in previous lives. So the old MO of the system that we have today was in existence long, long ago. That's why in every new age they bring back the old, which is in fact the new. Figure that one out. They bring back reincarnation. They bring back belief in the stars affecting you. They bring back all the old stuff. And of course the tarot cards, which has an esoteric side to it, which is never ever given to the public, even by the ones who are put out there to push it. These are all methods, in a sense. They're all techniques written in the stars and written in the cards. They're techniques of controlling human behavior and manipulating the masses. That's really what mystery religion was all about. In previous times, they did have, let's say, rebellions in some countries. We'll find that some of those who left Egypt set up in Crotona, for instance, and had schools set up. They brought in women too for the first time and trained them to be the perfect wives who could then manipulate wealthy leaders and change their minds and help the rebellion come along without a hitch. Some of them were caught and executed in the school at Crotona, which was just a little outpost of Greece at the time, in Italy, because they had an empire at that time. Crotona school was burned to the ground and most of them hunted down. But it didn't stop them. It's gone down through the ages with the same system as they move from country to country, accumulate the wealth of the country, and then use standing armies to go out and invade other countries and take over those countries' empire building with the goal eventually to reach a world empire. And it did it through a myriad of sub-cults, all different degrees of them, of Freemasonry as we know it today. The Freemasons at the bottom haven't a clue what it's all about, except they get little payoffs and little exemptions from legalities that everyone else is subjected to, and they take little cuts, and they also are guaranteed to have business come their way by other Masons. They also take promotions, unmerited favor, quite happily as well. The bigger ones above them are taught the mysteries gradually until they're above the 40th degree, because life begins at 40, and they're told some of the truth. These are the characters who end up in the very high bureaucratic state positions within government, the departments of foreign offices or the State Department. They know what it's all about, and they also get incredible perks. They also get certain longevity, health care, which you will never see, being a member of the masses. That's the world we live in.
From myself, Alan Ward, it's good night to me, your God or your gods go with you.